This is the Up and Running Morning Show on 98.1 KZE. I'm Rick. That was the band who played at the Woodstock 1969 Music and Arts Aquarian Exposition. And before that, we heard Rain Park and Other Things by the Cowsills, a song co-written by Artie Kornfeld, who is on the telephone with us right now. Good morning, Artie.
Yeah, and produced by Artie Kornfeld.
Okay, of course.
And published by Artie Kornfeld.
Now we're talking. Rain Park
and
Other Things.
Then you played the band, and I had the band, because I was running Capitol Rock.
Yeah.
And Danko and Robbie were good friends of mine.
Huh.
And not only that, I lived out in Zuma Beach next to Shangri-La Ranch, where the last waltz was done.
Huh.
Yeah, and you played the band, and I just flashed. I just got in. I flashed. I was in it at an alternative music conference in Boulder, Colorado, sitting with Robbie Robertson having dinner. And then someone said, Artie, you know, Fogarty's playing in town. So we went into Boulder together.
Huh.
And we went in the back of the room because Fogarty was playing. And we didn't want to be noticed because we didn't want to take away, you know, because it was definitely a Woodstock crowd. Because anybody, I'm a Woodstock crowd. I mean, just because I did it doesn't mean I'm not part of the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, so then, and then Fogarty's singing, then he, all of a sudden he stops and he says, could you believe this is the amp I had on the stage at Woodstock? And then Robbie and I sort of stuck out the back, and I went around to meet, just see Fogarty when he came off stage. You know, it's like,
yeah, I saw him too.
The old boys club.
I saw Fogarty as well, and he brought out the custom padded amplifier that he used at Woodstock.
I know. It was me sitting in my apartment in New York with the house guest Michael and my late wife, and me saying, you know what, I'd like to rent the Broadway theater and just put an act in for free,
because I
had money because I had a lot of hits as a writer, and I had already run Mercury and Roulette, and now I was running Capitol.
Huh.
So it was sort of crazy, you know. It's like it's so huge. To me, it's huge, and it's also a responsibility.
Well, what's huge?
Well, just the fact you know, what I keep fighting about is just to bring back the feeling of Woodstock, which was the feeling about why when everybody came up with names, and I said, since I was in charge of the promotion, I just said no. It's about peace and music, so I'm calling it 3 days of peace and music.
Mm. That was, and, you coined that then?
Yeah, well, I was, it was me and two other people, was the whole promotion staff.
So you,
Michael had 1,900 people working on the site that never got built, you know, but I knew radio because I'd been writing songs. My first session I did was in 1958.
Mm. So you, at the time, you were working at Capitol Records, and Michael Lang came up from Florida to proposition you about work?
No, Michael Lang came up from Florida because he had to leave Florida because his head shop was closed. And he knew I was from his neighborhood in Brooklyn.
Mm.
And I was sitting in my office, and my secretary called and said, Ellen, she says, oh, there's someone here to see. I said, well, I got to be in the studio in an hour or two, and it's like, tell him to get back tomorrow. And then she called back in and said, he said to tell you he's from Bensonhurst, and that's the neighborhood I was from in Brooklyn. So I said, let him come in, and I guess he had good Colombian, and he wound up living with me in my apartment in Manhattan for 2 years before Woodstock.
Huh. And that's how it all happened?
I supported him. We became friends. No, he pulled me in.
Yeah.
You know, and may his soul rest in peace, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's pretty funny. So he came to your office, lit up a doobie, and the rest is history. Wow.
Well, it's just that... I was not from the get high thing because I was in college. I was a class president. I was a baseball player, you know, and I had a father that was a cop, and he had a father that was a con man.
Yeah.
So he learned from his father, and I learned from mine. And No, we just talked, and it was spiritual. Michael basically learned from me because the Beatles, when they came back from, I had the Beatles, and when they came back from India, John took me over to the Maharishi's place in New York, and I got a mantra, and I started doing transcendental meditation. So I was sort of like telling Michael about, you know, this is what it does for me, you know, and, you know, and then Lee Arnold, the radio guy, I don't know if you remember Lee Arnold, but he was one of the top radio people, and Lee got into a Buddhist chanting, you know, and I was, Michael represented an area. I was not a guy that went to the village, you know. I mean, the last time I was at the village was the night we signed the band. The night we signed the Love and Spoonful. I was running the music for Koppelman Rubin, and it was a company. And Bob Cavallo, who wound up managing Prince and becoming very successful, he came to New York with Eric Jacobs and a producer, and they played us the You Believe in Magic. And then he said, you know, the band, the Spoonful, is going to play at in the village tonight. If I'm going off...
No, go ahead.
This is how Sebastian got it to Woodstock. And so we went to the Cafe Wa, and I wasn't a village hangout. I mean, my friend Freddie Weintraub in the Bitter End, and he's the one who introduced Dylan. You know, so I knew the village, you know, from going down once in a while. And Debbie Harry lived in Soho, and I had the Wind in the Willows, and she wasn't Blondie then, she was Debbie. And so we went into the Cafe Wa, and it was empty. And there was just two people sitting there, and it was Spector and Dylan. And then next to that was my chair, and then a chair for my wife, and then a chair for my two partners and their wives. So that's what it was. There was eight of us in the whole club. It was empty.
Wow.
And then it was a 10x10 wood stage, and then John and the Spoonful came out, and I heard Spector and Dylan. I was always nervous when I'm with Dylan. I don't know, something about Dylan gets me nervous. And I've been with Obama and people like that. But something about Dylan, you know, I relate to him, and I love his mind. But he always gets me nervous when I'm around him.
So what did he have to say when he saw the Love and Spoonful?
Well, I heard them talking, and I heard Spector. I heard Phil saying, you know what, Bob, I sort of like this band. Maybe I'll sign him to Phillies Records. So after the show was over, we said goodbye. And then I said to Charlie and Don, who I work for, I said, you know, we should sign the Spoonful, and we should put out Do You Believe in Magic? I know it's a demo. It was a demonstration record.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a master record. I said, we should put it out. And we put it out. And Magic went to number one. And that's how... So this is how it connects to Woodstock.
Huh.
So now I know Sebastian. Now you talked about weed. We're in the office in the Bell Building area of New York, where all the music came from in New York.
Yeah.
And I smelled something coming out of the office where John was hanging out. So I walked in. I said, John, what's that smell? He said, and I'm already 20-something years old. He said, Artie, it's you know, the song Along Came Mary. I said, yeah, I know the song. He said, well, that's Mary Jane. He said, marijuana. I said, oh, really? I said, what's it like? He took out a joint, and he gave it to me. He said, take it over to Linda. It was my late wife's name. He said, and see what you think. So then, you know, the next day I said, John, could you get me more of that stuff? And I liked it.
Yeah,
I liked it, you know. And now I'm sober. Everybody, I'm sober. I founded Cocaine Anonymous, and I'm sober 53 years now.
All right,
you know.
Wow.
And I don't think weed is negative. I think people shouldn't get smashed and go driving cars down the turnpike.
Yeah,
because I remember how it affected me.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's like I didn't like to smoke weed in the recording studio. Because I had to be queer.
Well, makes sense. You want to be in the right frame of mind.
Well, my engineer just got into the Rock Hall of Fame, which I turned down, by the way.
Huh.
You know?
You turned him down?
Oh, yeah, I was speaking at the University of Akron, and then some people on Facebook came to see me there, and then they invited me to come to the Rock Hall of Fame. They emptied the Rock Hall of Fame, and they wanted to give me a private tour.
Huh.
And when we got there, I felt uncomfortable. And I still can't figure out, why isn't Woodstock in the Rock Hall of Fame?
Huh.
I mean, half the artists in there are only in there. I made the movie deal myself. I made the movie deal for Woodstock 4 days before the concert. And why Woodstock is not in the Rock Hall of Fame is just politics.
Yeah.
And that's that part of the music world that I never was a part of. I was always a rebel. I didn't like it.
Mm.
It was too like IBM, International Corporation kind of thing. Mm.
Well, Artie, how long ago did the Pied Piper of Woodstock come out, the book?
Oh, the book, I've never read that book. I wrote it, but I never read it.
Well,
no, you know
you
what?
Lived
it was
it.
Very. It's the book is not just about Woodstock. It's about the whole trip of what I went through. It's about happening in the music world. It's about what happens. It's about getting addicted to cocaine. It's about getting sober. It's about losing my wife and child, and how to get through grief. Because I'm a certified grief counselor.
Mm.
You know, so it's like the book came out. Whenever it came out, I don't
came
remember
out
when it
in
came out.
2010, so it's been
a
little while.
I was doing that internet show I did.
Yeah,
I never promoted it. I never advertised anywhere.
Hmm.
Even though I was getting 100,000 people an hour on the internet show I did every week.
Yeah.
And I did it for 5 years. I never really pushed the book.
You never said buy my book.
No.
Wow.
No.
All right.
No, not at all. I just said, if you want to know the whole inside story of the whole music trip, you know, the victories and the defeats and the coming backs and the survival, you know, check out the book. Maybe I said it twice in 5 years.
Huh. Amazing.
Yeah, and it was so painful writing it because I had to relive, and a lot of parts of my life were sad, too. Were very sad.
Yeah.
There was a lot of victories and a lot of defeat. And the defeat is just life.
Well,
and everybody goes through it no matter what they do for a living.
Absolutely. Artie, can you tell us what some of your favorite moments of Woodstock 69 were from your personal experience?
Okay, one thing comes to mind. That Linda disappeared for an hour and I couldn't find her and I got nervous.
Your wife.
Yeah, my wife.
Yeah.
And I was looking. I couldn't find her. And I passed. Joan Baez was a friend of mine. I passed the tent where she was. And she was pregnant.
Huh.
And we sat and talked. And then she said, Artie, put your ear on my stomach and listen to the heartbeat of the baby. And I did.
Wow.
And that sort of brought me back down to earth. You know, I wasn't so scared.
Wow.
You know, because when you have a 500,000 people almost and your wife is missing, it could get you nervous because I was very much in love.
Yeah.
And that pulled me out, and that was one. And I guess the way I wound up standing next to Jimmy, the highlight really was when Michael came to me all panicked because he didn't get the electric up in time. For some reason, the field was never put together.
Wow.
You know, the promotion was there, but the production wasn't there.
Wow.
But it was working. There was a vibe. And you know what I did on Memorial Day 1969, which was my wedding anniversary to my late wife, is the weekend that I ran those ads, and I put pictures, tickets of the from the concert in the newspapers, and I didn't do it to make money like people thought. I did it because I only had $60,000 left, and I had 2.5 months to keep the concert alive.
Oh, man.
So I wanted to find out where I would spend the money.
Huh.
And what happened was, we sold over 100,000 tickets and brought in $1,200,000. And what I wanted to see was, with the tickets, people had to put their addresses. I wanted to see where the audience was, where I could spend the money I had. Yeah. And I found out they weren't coming from the Greenwich Village. They were coming from the upper lower class and the middle class, you know, and they weren't coming from the hippie world. They were coming from the music world. Hmm. You know, so when I advertised after that, I went on the radio stations because I knew radio cold because I'd already been doing it for a long time. And you couldn't hire me to promote something, but I was in the studio and I was writing for big acts. And I was landing records, because I was the audience.
I was no different than any.
When I speak, I always close by saying, "And by the way, the stars of Woodstock were not on the stage; they were on the field."
Mm. Yes. Well, do you also have memories that were horrible?
No, I got dosed.
Oh.
I never taken a psychedelic, and I got dosed.
How'd you handle that?
How'd I handle it?
Yeah.
Very cautiously. I run across Owsley, the famous Owsley.
Owsley, yeah.
Okay, and I had been up for like 70 hours straight, and I just said, "Owsley, do you have some kind of diet pill or something? Because I got to keep going, and I'm falling over." So he gave me and my wife a couple of pills, we took it. Now the band came on, and they were one of my acts. Cause they were on Capitol, and I was running Capitol Rock, and they were friends of mine. So I wanted to see it. So I'm sitting on Robbie Robertson's amp, and they're playing, and I'm hearing music. All of a sudden, I'm hearing music like I never heard it before, you know? It's like going through me, like in sparkling colors. And then what happened was the bummer hit because the acid kicked in, and I saw troopers dropping from helicopters shooting the crowd with machine guns.
Whoa.
And I saw all the negative that I thought could possibly happen at Woodstock. And when I advertised to avoid happening, and it was happening negative. So I went backstage, and I sat with an artist I produced, Bert Sommer, who, by the way, Bert Sommer got the only standing ovation at Woodstock, and politics kept him out of the movie.
Huh.
And I had produced three albums of them, and I love Bert.
Wow.
And he went to high school with my late wife.
Mm.
And Paul Simon went there, and Bert Sommer went there. And then I signed the Left Bank, Larry Brown, and sang,
wow.
Who wrote and did Walk Away Renee. He went. They all went to Leslie West. They all went to Forest Hills High School in Queens, New York.
Wow.
And Michael
then,
sat down with me, and he says, "Artie, I can't talk you out of this."
When you were backstage.
This is what? No,
yeah.
I was sitting
at
on the. I was just sitting on the hill behind the stage.
Yeah,
it was not like a formal backstage. It was a big backstage area.
And your mind was blown at the time, and
well,
Michael came by.
No, I didn't know what was happening because I had never experienced it.
Yeah,
I mean, I experienced it in my normal everyday life. Because I think I woke up, my mind was blown anyway. You know, and when I went to sleep, it was at peace.
Mm.
You know, that was a good part. So I just said to this was just before Jimmy was supposed to go on.
Wow.
And it was towards the end, and he was already 7 hours behind when he was supposed to go on.
Mm.
And I was trying to cool Jimmy out while I was trying to come back down to earth.
Wow.
And then I said to Linda, "We got to go to the medical tent." I didn't. I went there. And They helped us out with some kind of medication to calm us down. And then I heard Jimmy tuning his guitar. So I walked out and I went up on stage. That's why on all those T-shirts and the posters, I'm one of those three guys standing next to Jimmy on stage.
Yeah.
Which is really weird because I'm the one who got Richie Havens to open.
Huh.
Yeah. Michael came to...
Yeah.
No, they never got the electric working. And so we had it. We were going to put on, at the beginning, we were going to open with Sweetwater and Nancy Nevins.
Mm.
And because Sweetwater was great, and we couldn't do electric.
Oh.
And Michael came to me all panicked. He says, "Artie, Now, one of the guys who worked for me, they're supposed to do all these rock shows, and nobody could get Richie to go on. I said, Michael, Richie's a friend of mine. I said, I got him his first lawyer when he came to New York, and I helped him start his career. I said, I can talk to Richie, and I talked to Richie, and I explained to Richie, you got to go on. He said, Artie, I don't want to sell out. I said, Richie, you got to open because you have the vibe. That's Woodstock.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk Richie. That's why you see that picture of me giving the mic to Richie.
Yeah.
And Richie opened, and as I was walking away, I turned and I got the look from the stage at the crowd, and it was frightening.
Oh.
You know, it was really frightening. Yeah. With so many people.
I bet you Richie felt the same way. Yeah.
But Richie was Richie.
Yeah.
I love Richie.
Yeah.
Richie was one of the nicest people in my life I've ever met.
Period.
And
yeah,
and he was a friend anyway, you know.
Yeah.
And we were both writers and singers. And as I walked away from Richie at the mic and started to walk off the stage, I heard freedom, freedom. And I heard him going to freedom. And it just blew my mind.
Mm.
You know, it was a higher moment than I want to take you higher, you know.
Yeah. Well, of course.
You know, it was just it was what Woodstock was all about.
Mm. Well, you know, we still
was about freedom.
Yeah, we still carry those ethics and freedom, peace and love and all that good message that Woodstock has brought to the table and to the consciousness of people's minds. Thank you for everything you've done to inspire people. Still, 56 years later, are talking about and wishing they were at this 3-day Aquarian exposition.
Well, you know, I read all the posts because it was amazing. This year, all of a sudden, in the last, every 2 weeks, I was getting 300,000 posts on my site.
Yeah.
On Facebook. I mean, 300,000 every 2 weeks for about 5 weeks. So I had over 1 million hits to me.
Wow.
And I read the posts, and what got me disappointed is too many people were writing about the rock acts and this, but nobody was writing about the war going on in the Mideast. No one was writing about the other side because it was 3 days of peace and music. And they were talking about the music, but they weren't talking about peace and what's going on in America right now.
Hmm.
And that's, I guess that's why I'm a rebel, because I'm still on that side that we want peace. I mean, now that I'm 83 years old, God Almighty, I've been doing this for 65 years.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Well, keep up the good health and keep up the good work and I'll do the best I can, but
it starts with you, you know.
Well, I'll keep on going and I'll keep the legacy continuing, but it's generations beyond us, Artie, that have to keep this going. So if we get to remind them.
I'm working very hard now on reuniting and getting the new Woodstock Nation together.
Well, thank you.
Because the old Woodstock Nation, a lot has passed away.
It's true.
I know, because in my generation, I was born in 1942, and my dad was in the Pacific in the war. And by the way, my dad had 4 Purple Hearts and his Distinguished Service Cross.
Whoa.
And he was a New York cop. And my mother founded the Freedom Rides.
Mm.
So I was born to do Woodstock, because the Freedom Rides, which integrated the schools for blacks in the South, I mean, they were connected to Woodstock.
It was
and
all
so
connected.
Was I Love the Flower Girl. And even when I wrote with Brian Wilson and we wrote Dead Man's Curve, I write a metaphor. And the song, I Love the Flower Girl, you hear it, but you know what's in that song? It's about me predicting Woodstock. It's about me predicting the death of my wife and my child.
Mm.
It's about me getting through it. And at the end, coming back to I Love the Flower Girl, I don't know just why, she simply caught my eye. And that's what Woodstock was. I knew why, because I was doing it, but I wanted to catch people's eye. And I did, you know, and we all did. So anybody out on that field, oh, by the way, Debbie Harry, just a quick thing about Blondie. Yeah. Okay, I had Debbie Harry in a group called The Wind in the Willows at Capitol.
Yeah.
And we were friends. And when she got in problems, I helped her get sober.
Huh.
And after I left Capitol to do Woodstock, because I sacrificed everything.
Yeah.
I gave away all the bread I had just to do Woodstock because I knew it had to happen.
You believed in it. And that's it. You had
and
a dream.
I believed in war, what is it good for?
Yeah.
Nothing at all.
Nothing.
Like the song said, war, what is it good for? Nothing at all. And I'm just trying to get it back to the point where the new generations start to hear music.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for you guys at radio. And unfortunately, there's too many corporations controlling a lot of the radio.
We are independent, and the revolution is not being televised. It's happening here at 98.1
KZE. Well, that's why I was happy when I heard from you.
So, yeah. Artie Kornfeld, thank you so much. I mean, we could talk for hours and hours, and we'll have to do that another time. But as of now, for Radioland, Artie Kornfeld, the promoter, producer, the man behind Woodstock 69 and 72 hit singles and so much more. Check out his book, The Pied Piper of Woodstock.
Well, like I said in the song, follow me, I'm the Pied Piper, I'll show you where it's at.
And if you want to know more, read the book. And Artie, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, you can only get it at Amazon because I never even made a deal to distribute it.
Huh. Well, keep up the good work. Keep freedom in everyone's forefront of their minds. And thank you, Artie. And we'll talk soon.
You're on the front line, and you keep it up, too.
I'll do the best I can. Thank you.
Yeah, we're all playing in the same band.
All right. Artie Kornfeld, our guest, 98.1 KZE. All the best to you, Artie.
Same to you, man. Keep
thank
on.
You. Peace.
Peace.
It's the Up and Running Morning Show, 98.1 KZE. I'm Rick. We'll be right back after this.
Hi again. This is Dr. Jeff Villalmo.
And this is Dr. Maureen Villalmo. And we're so happy.